The Drives podcast is presented by Disability Advantage Group. Need help applying for Social Security, disability benefits? One call does it all. Call Disability Advantage Group at 865-566-0800 or visit dag-us.com. 5 o'clock on your Tuesday afternoon, quitting time. Rick Butler is in with your top five at five.
All right, fellas, number one. We are about 30 minutes away from the Tennessee Volunteers baseball team kicking off their run in the SEC tournament in Hoover, Alabama. The ninth-seeded Tennessee Vols will take on the eighth-seeded Auburn Tigers in a single elimination game, win or go home, 30 minutes from right now.
Do or die, Tony Vitellico and the baseball Vols in Hoover. The Vols, they're in Hoover. They and Hoover taking on Auburn. I'm in. You know, we're in the NCAA tournament. Like, it feels good to go down there and not have to.
Oh, we don't have to win to get in?
I don't think so. I think we're in. Like, I just think it would. You're playing for seeding at this point.
We ended with 14 conference wins. And going back to that stat last week, teams with 13 to 15 conference wins. I have a 58% chance of getting into the NCAA tournament.
We need to win tonight.
So, yeah, we basically do need to win tonight. All right, number two, the University of Tennessee basketball team has officially announced their newest player, Arizona State transfer Urush Plausevich.
No, you didn't.
Urush?
I butchered it earlier. Keep going.
The Serbian native played high school basketball in Chattanooga before going to Arizona State for 1 year. The 7 foot 1 inch tall Plausevich will be enrolling in UT classes this summer. Tennessee is expected to attempt to file a waiver for him, which would allow him to be eligible immediately.
Wait, how are you pronouncing this?
I said Urush Plausevich.
It's close.
Urush.
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 Plausevich.
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 Ah,
I thought he was.
I thought it was Plausevich.
Urush Plausevich.
I talked to, I spent a bunch of time with Brad Woodson today, former walk-on for Tennessee.
Is he a fan of the show?
He's a fan of the show.
Okay.
And him and I literally spent 15 minutes going over all the different ways you could say it. And then he gave confirmation.
Tom Satkoviak, who knows a thing or two about difficult to pronounce names, he's the UT Basketball Sports Information Director, did a short video today on Twitter where he slowly pronounces it twice. And
so that's the only reason that you know is because Tom was nice enough to put out a video to teach you.
Yeah.
Isn't that the only way anybody knows?
I love how you wait till hour three to give Tom credit. It's mighty, mighty nice of you, Russ.
I mean, I wasn't trying to. I'm just saying it's. That's Urush Plausevich.
Urush.
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 It's a difficult one, man. I thought it was Urush Plausevich. I thought it was Urush, but it's Urush. Anyway, that's our new 7 foot Serb. Please continue, Rick.
Number three, there have been over 2,200 games between the New York Yankees and the Boston Red Sox. Ooh. And they will be, or next month, they'll be going to London to play a game at the Olympic Stadium, where for the first time in their history, they'll be playing on a turf field. So they're going to London. Full turf.
What stadium in London?
It just says Major League Baseball has access to the Olympic Stadium. It is West Ham's.
Yeah, it's West Ham United where they play. That's a terrible stadium.
Really?
Would it be good for baseball?
Best stadium in the Premier League? Man City?
It depends on what you want. I mean, like in terms of like impressive structures, in terms of impressiveness, it would be that new Tottenham Stadium that just opened this year is amazing. But if you're an old school purist like me, I like the box stadiums with the crazy roofs on it. Old Trafford, Stamford Bridge.
All right.
Those are the
learn
classic
something new about you every day.
English grounds.
This thing in this stadium looks like the thing that was in Iron Man's chest. It's just like a big.
It does look like.
Yeah.
What did you call it?
It's the arc reactor.
His arc reactor.
That was saving his heart.
Oh, man.
Then he got a triangle. All right. Number four. The NBA All-Rookie First Team has been announced, and it was actually the top five picks of the NBA draft were the All-Rookie First Team selected. So you have DeAndre Ayton of the Phoenix Suns, Marvin Bagley III of the Sacramento Kings, Jaren Jackson Jr. of the Memphis Grizzlies, Trae Young of the Atlanta Hawks, and Luka Doncic of the Dallas Mavericks.
It's the all-rookie team.
All-rookie first team.
Who's rookie of the year?
It'll be Luka Doncic. Although there is a big debate.
My name is Luka. I play for the Dallas Mavs. You ever hear that song? Who did that song, Bear?
If you hadn't asked me, it was on the tip of my tongue. My name is Luka.
Suzanne Vega?
Yeah.
Was that her?
I believe so.
There's a funny song somebody made in
Summer 87. It was a huge hit.
Mm-hmm. It's about child abuse, man. Very sad song. Very sad. Socially conscious.
All right. Number five, Rick.
Number five.
Getting too macabre. Bear wants to move it along here.
No, we're almost out.
That's good producing. Former Tennessee punter Matt Darr has been signed by the New York Jets after he played five games with the Buffalo Bills. That's not the story, though. The story is that Tennessee leads the NFL in punters.
We're punter you right now.
We're punter
you. Are both Colquitts, or is it just Britton now?
I think Britton's just left now.
So Britton Colquitt, Matt Darr, Pilardi.
Pilardi.
Is that it?
Trevor Daniels plays for the
Trevor
Texans.
Trevor Daniels.
The king.
Golly,
No, Dustin Colquitt played for the Chiefs.
We got five punters.
Yeah, we got five.
How is that possible?
We got
out
the
of
most.
32 professional punting jobs. We've got five. It's hard enough to just get one.
Well, because
we've it's not about sucking. It's about
Yeah, it is, because we've been doing a lot of punting. Punters that want to make the NFL want to come here.
I feel like most punters, though, that it doesn't matter. Like, you know, punters will go anywhere.
Dustin Colquitt's 37 years old.
Cool.
He went to Bearden. I did not know
he
that.
Did.
Okay, so
both the Colquitts did.
Yeah. I believe this number is correct.
He's so young. What was the thing he asked? Never mind. We can't talk about it because it was a radio thing. Rick asked like the most stunningly obvious question last week in the group text. It was just Rick,
come on.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
Oh,
hey, you do that thing you do. Oh. You act like a complete idiot on the group chat from time to time. It's all right.
I was just getting clarification. Okay, if my research is correct, out of the 32 NFL teams, how many do you believe have a Tennessee player on it?
I'll say 28.
I think it's probably lower than that now. I'll say 21.
22. Mm. 22 out of 32.
That's a pretty good number.
That number used to be huge, man. Like a...
Hey, at one point, didn't we have like a Vol on almost every team?
From like 95 to about 2005, it was
like
always
all the way to like 90.
It was us and Miami and maybe Ohio State were always like
just
the top.
Churning out.
Just the top three teams every single year in terms of number of NFL players.
Another
we always
one.
Had like in the 50s.
The amount of Tennessee players in the NFL, I will put the, because it's harder to guess, I will put the over-under at 30.
I'd say under.
I'll say sadly. Over.
31.
Who? Does that mean a one?
I believe that to be true. I think it could be one or two off. But
is that counting taxi squad players? I mean, we're talking like Tyler Bray's getting counted in that one.
Yeah, I don't know.
Matt Sims, if he's still on the taxi squad up there in New York.
I kind of think so, because I can't name by anywhere close to 31 prominent players from Tennessee. You know, like your Jason Witten's or Egg Berry's, Cordero.
I think that it's pertinent to the conversation we've been having today about recruiting problems.
Oh, sure.
Because, you know, we talk about, Tennessee's got to win games, and they do. Like, that's the quickest path to do that. But the best thing in your arsenal to sell is that, guys in the NFL. That's where these kids base their decisions off of, is can school X, Y, or Z get me – to the NFL. That's why they all go to Alabama. It's not because Nick Saban's a nice guy or they like the uniform. Maybe they like Alabama. They probably don't like Alabama, the state and the people, but they see the University of Alabama Crimson Tide football program as a conduit to NFL riches. That's why they go. And we can't sell that right now, and unfortunately we're not going to be able to sell it for a long time. So you sell what you get, what you do sell, but if you can ever get back, and it's hard to do. I mean, Clemson has put themselves in this conversation. Georgia's put themselves in this conversation. You know, other schools Like, if you can get back in there with terms of, then more and more players are going to be coming in.
Well, you mentioned Tennessee and Miami. Another interesting stat that revolves around those two schools is that with Cordarrelle Patterson and John Kelly going to the Super Bowl this year, first off, that marks the 10th consecutive season that Tennessee is represented in the Super Bowl. But also, so 63 active players from Tennessee have played in a Super Bowl. Only one is above Tennessee, Miami at 64. So I found it interesting that you brought up those two teams when, you know, it's not even just the NFL. It's in the history of the Super Bowl. No two college programs have sent more players to the Super Bowl than Tennessee and Miami.
All right, there is your top five at five. It's brought to you this afternoon by our friends at Citizens National Bank, the official bank of the drive. Bank local. Simplify your life by turning to Citizens National Bank for all your personal banking needs. They've got a variety of checking and savings options, plus chip-enabled debit and credit cards right here in your community to help you safely and securely manage your everyday cash flow and build your rainy day savings. Our phone number, you want to jump on board, 865-546-8200. All right, guys, we talked about the anonymous coach quotes. I've got the Athlon National College Football Preview here for you. Who else do you want to hear about?
Kirby.
Georgia? Let's see what the anonymous opposing coach has to say about Georgia. By the way, I thought the statements about Tennessee were A, right on. Because sometimes you read this stuff and you're like, oh, that doesn't even make any sense. Because we follow the team so closely. But I thought the statements in Athlon were very accurate and somewhat encouraging. It's like, oh, you know, like, we just got to coach up what we got, continue to recruit, and, you know, methodically work our way out of this. The Athlon thing did not imply that this was a 5-year rebuild like Lindy's does. It was, I got from, like, man, we're still probably 2 or 3 years away.
Did you buy both magazines?
Oh, yeah.
You won't give me one of them.
Well, I just got them last week. I haven't had time to read them all.
Okay, go ahead.
On Georgia, an anonymous opposing coach says, quote, "I think it's fair to say Kirby got Georgia to that Alabama level faster than Nick Saban got Alabama there. They're ready to roll. Obviously, they lose some guys, some wideouts too, but on offense, Kirby's recruiting already has this program in reload mentality. It's scary how fast they've recruited. There's a few spots you can look at where they need someone to step in, center and receiver. At tight end, they got hit with another early declare, Isaac Nauta, and a transfer, Luke Ford. But there's competition at every spot. The two young backs, James Cook and Zamir White, they look exactly like what you expect in a Georgia backfield. They might not miss a beat. I think with Jake Fromm coming back and Jim Chaney leaving, there's going to be a throw the ball a little bit more mentality. I think they'll spread it out more and a little bit more in their base stuff. The big question mark is James Coley's a first-time play caller in the SEC. That's going to be a bit scary at first. And in the situation, the responsibility is solely on you if it goes bad, because the talent is all over the field. But Fromm helps you out there. He's comfortable with his stuff. This is the best roster, both talent and depth, in the division, and the first or second best in the league with Alabama. They'll develop that defense just fine. It comes down to play calling and that SEC title game."
That's pretty accurate.
You think Kirby got Georgia to the Alabama level faster than Nick Saban got him there?
No, because he's not on the Alabama level yet, because he hasn't won a natty.
Bama went.
That's Nick Saban level.
Georgia went 12-0 last year, right? And then, or the second year, before losing, they won the SEC championship.
Yes.
Yeah, they
beat Oklahoma and then lost to Bama in the title game.
Correct. Yeah.
That was their only loss?
I felt like they lost to somebody else that year.
So they had a similar, if that's the way it went down, they had a similar rise as Alabama, where I think Kirby was 8-5 his first year, 12-0 his second year. Bama was 6-6 their first year, 12-0 the second year.
Well, how much?
They won the Natty the second
year. No, they didn't.
They didn't? Who'd they lose to?
They lost to Florida in the
SEC championship
game.
Yeah,
in the SEC championship. They lost to Tebow and those guys.
See, that's what I was going to say, because how much do you factor in the SEC East versus the SEC West, right? Because ultimately, like, let's not joke, the SEC West is considerably different to sweep than the East is, too.
But you have to look at when we're talking about, you know, the question here is, has Kirby rebuilt Georgia at the same pace that Saban rebuilt Alabama? Now, I will argue, first of all, that Georgia was in better shape when Kirby got there than Alabama was when Saban got there.
Yeah. The cupboards were stocked.
But you also have to note that in 2000, was it five or six, Saban's first year, whatever, his first year there at Bama, Urban Meyer is just beginning his run of, he won national championships in 2006, 2008.
Yeah.
So you've got Urban, you've got Fulmer at Tennessee, still winning, though not at the same rate, but still winning. It was still a winning program. And Mark Richt at Georgia. Before Saban arrives at Bama, the SEC East was at that time the better division.
Yeah.
I believe.
And it had been for quite some time.
Les Miles has continued the success that Auburn LSU has had under, like, they're still pretty good. You know, they haven't dropped off significantly. They won a national championship in 2007.
Yeah, they backed their way into that. It was that wacky year. How many losses? That was the year they beat us in the SEC championship game.
Yeah. They beat Ohio in the Sugar Bowl for the championship that year. So LSU's still pretty good. Tommy Tuberville is at Auburn at this point. He's run off a string of, I think, seven in a row or something like that over Bama that Saban quickly turned around. But I would give the East a slight edge at that time. Now, there's no doubt when Kirby arrives at Georgia, it's the SEC West.
Yeah.
And the SEC East is in shambles. I mean, you've got Missouri going to championships. You've got the Shark Humper taking Florida to championship games.
I mean, Ole Miss was doing well.
Yeah. So I think he had a slightly easier job there, but he turned it around quickly. Boy, their schedule this year.
Who's? Georgia's?
Yeah. Non-conference games against Murray State, Arkansas State, Notre Dame at home. Of course, at Georgia Tech. Got to think those are all wins. Their key games would be, I guess, Florida and the cocktail party at Auburn. And they get Texas A&M at home. So they flip their schedule around. They've got at Auburn, November 16th, Texas A&M at home, November 23rd. That'll be a weird game. And then at Georgia Tech, who they should dominate to close out the season.
Did they say anything interesting about Kentucky? Like, I'd love to know if any of the coaches were just like, these chumps shouldn't have done anything.
I'll read it real quick for you. Here's an opposing coach sizing up Kentucky. Tons of questions. Maybe the team that will look the most different on both sides this season. They lose a ton on defense. You don't replace a Josh Allen at Alabama, and you sure as hell don't at Kentucky. He was the best edge rusher in the game. Their secondary is basically starting over. The good news is that it's a line of scrimmage league, and they're really solid on both the offensive and defensive line. They get their left tackle Landon Young back from an ACL last year. He'll be a huge asset. I'd worry more about the offense. The needs are obvious. Losing Benny Snell is a huge blow. He's their all-time yards guy, but they have a stable behind Snell of faster, more dynamic guys, not grinders. Eddie Grant will have to go back to the Cincinnati stuff, spreading the ball around, going faster, but they have to get efficient quarterback play. Terry Wilson can run like a scalded dog. It's a weird thing to say.
Yeah,
but he's
weird.
Got to improve throwing the ball on third down. They need better execution passing and receiving. They won't have the defense to bail out short drives. They're going to fall back some this year because of how good the league is, but I think Mark Stoops has done a great job. Even if they end up 500 this season, they're still going in the right direction. They're just not a reload team. They're going to need more than 1 year to build, but Stoops has them in a really nice spot.
So is that what a coach said about them or just what an analyst?
Yeah, that's what an anonymous opposing coach said about Kentucky. Yeah, they don't have a quarterback, man.
No.
They're not going to be able to, hand the ball to Benny Snell 30 times. Terry Wilson can fling it, but he's just not that accurate. They still got
And the defense ain't going to be nearly as good.
Lynn Bowden is back. He's only a junior. You got two more years. But, yeah, the defense should drop off a little bit. They're starting over in the secondary, which they're a 3-4 defense, kind of like us. You don't lose all your secondary guys and not miss a beat. 865-546-8200. Coming up, get more of your phone calls in here. Plus, we're going to talk about Chernobyl. This is the new show. And it got weird last night. It got weird. It got gross, scary, and weird. Stay with us. The Drive continues. Fox Sports Knoxville. We're back with more after this. The Drive's podcast is presented by Disability Advantage Group. Need help applying for Social Security disability benefits? One call does it all. Call Disability Advantage Group today at 865-566-0800. Applying for disability can be very tedious. Having an experienced attorney on your side makes it easy. Call Disability Advantage Group, 865-566-0800, or visit online at dag-us.com.
It's The Drive.
Fox Sports Knoxville, The Drive continues. Game of Thrones is over. Our new show that we're watching together right now on The Drive is Chernobyl on HBO. It's a mini-series about the nuclear disaster in 1986 in Russia. Bear is boycotting it on the grounds that the show is too macabre or
scary.
It is scary. Rick Butler has not started watching it yet because he's mailing in the last week on The Drive before he starts with the Blitz. So the only people that watched it is myself and new Fox Sports Knoxville quality control analyst Parker Pewitt. I don't know why I can't pronounce your last name, Parker. I'll work on that. He's watching this show with me, and you're into it. You like this show.
Yes. It's excellent.
It's phenomenal.
I was more excited for this episode than the finale for Game of Thrones.
It's a bold statement.
Wow.
Did you know anything? You're a younger guy, Parker. You're at UT, like so many of our fan-run quality control analysts. You're finishing up your education. So, I mean, what year were you born?
96.
So, 10 years after the incident in this movie happened. Did you know anything about Chernobyl before this? You kind of knew vaguely what it was, a nuclear accident and some people died, and
I probably got bored one night and started
went down the Wikipedia rabbit hole or something. All right, so this show, it's a 5-episode thing. Last night was episode 3, and for the first time, I found myself, they're showing the bodies of the first responders who are on the scene, and one of the firemen who he got right up close to it for several hours, and oh man, like the things that happened to these people. Like the second guy, they showed the fireman whose wife is there with him. They showed him right before he died. He was barely recognizable as a human being. It's one of the most disgusting things I've ever seen. Like he was just there are two legs and a torso and arms and a head there, but it's just like this purple gelatinous goo. I mean, it was and they said this was really close, spot on to what happened to those people that were there at first. And that was gross, man. I couldn't even look.
No.
I had to look away.
And they didn't even show the worst part of it.
Yeah, there was one guy that they go and they see, and I was listening to the podcast. There's a companion piece podcast that HBO has produced to go with this. And I was listening to this earlier today. And they said that they were originally planning to show the makeup artist had 7 stages of what happens to you. And the purple dude that we saw, I guess, was stage 6. Stage 7 was a guy who evidently, they said his skin just turned black and he had no face at the end. And they were going to film it, and the HBO executives were talking with the showrunners and were maybe not. I think we get it. And they're like, yeah, you know, at this point, it looks like we're almost having fun with it, which is not what they wanted to do because it's a very dark show. I mean, it's like a horror movie. And so that was my takeaway. Like, that had me rattled, man. I thought about that all night, and I've been thinking about it all day, man. I mean, that was disturbing, what we saw. And so these guys died. They take the bodies. They put them in a plastic bag. They put them in a zinc and lead-lined coffin. They put those into the ground, at, like six of them at a time. And then they bring in a cement truck and encase the entire thing in cement. And this is a real cemetery right outside Moscow where some of these bodies are buried. I mean, these dudes, like, oh, they had it rough, man. They had it bad. So that was an interesting, really interesting episode. They have, like, these miners they go to get because one of the things they had to do was, you know, the fire's still just burning for days. And so eventually the meltdown.
Well, the fire's out now.
The fire's out, but the melt.
The fuel's melting.
Yeah. The fuel is going to melt through the floor of the power plant and seep down. At that point, it would get into the water supply, which would be disastrous.
Yeah.
And so they decide we have to go and dig a hole underneath the plant where the meltdown is occurring so that they can put some sort of cooling system in underneath it to prevent the radioactive material from getting into the water supply. So to do this, they go and get these miners. And these miners are some hard dudes. They go and find these guys, and they come up there to dig this by hand. They can't do any sort of machinery or drilling or anything because that could disturb and, you know, cause a collapse on top of them, and then they all die, and it gets into the water supply. So these dudes are in this tunnel with shovels. They said it's about 130 degrees in the tunnel. So what do the guys do? They go and they ask the supervisors for fans because it's so hot down there, and they say, no, you can't have fans because it's going to stir up the dust, and it's radioactive dust, and it'll get in your lungs, and you'll die. So what do they do, Parker? What are the miners' what is their solution to the heat problem in the cave where they're digging the hole by hand with shovels?
They mine like their ancestors mined, butt naked. Nothing on.
Just a bunch of naked Russians with shovels in a hole, digging a hole. 24/7 around the clock. That was the solution.
Soaking in sweat. Butt naked with your buddies.
Yep. You get to know a man digging a hole in 130 degree heat with no clothes on. Say that. You get to know a guy. You get close. Maybe a little too close. Parker, any other observations? I mean, those were my two giant takeaways, were the just the gruesome scenes with the bodies last night and the minor situation. And I guess they're foreshadowing, like, they're going to figure out, you know, the cause of it. Like, there's something going on that we don't know yet, that there's going to be some sort of a reveal coming up, which I'm interested to see because I don't know where they're going with it. But there is some – for an historical drama that's about something that's history that we all know happened, I mean, there is quite a bit of suspense, which I think is interesting.
Mm-hmm. You know – I thought that we would lose interest in it after those first two episodes because it kind of – the fire's over, you know.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think yesterday might have been the best episode.
It was – I had to look away, man. It was intense. It was really, really intense. Great actors, too. The woman who plays the physicist who gets, like, detained by the KGB. There's that great speech about Jared Harris, who plays one of the scientists. He's being followed by the KGB now, and he approaches, like, one of the senior Soviet KGB guys, and he's like, why are you guys following me? And he's like, we follow everybody. Look down there are men following me. He says, the KGB is one giant circle of accountability. it was like the whole police state aspect of this show. I think they do a really good job kind of illustrating that too. So great performances, and two more episodes, I guess, of Chernobyl. Thanks, Parker Pewitt, the Drive Quality Control Analyst. who's watching this show with me and doesn't appear to be quite as grossed out as I was last night by the end. Bear, was that too macabre for you, or are you just kind of going into an altered state?
I mean, it's just, I'm a little bit older than you, and I kind of lived through it. You know, I'm not surprised there's some suspense. They've never told the whole story. So the people, you know, I guess it's Russia now, but the Soviets never did. They tried to cover it up for a long time.
Yeah.
But it's kind of hard to when you got a graphite plutonium fire burning out of control.
Well, yeah, they tried to. The other thing that kind of stands, like, the heroism of the dudes who went, the miners and everybody who went to fix it, knowing that they're probably going to die.
Yeah, absolutely.
But if they don't do it, who will? If nobody does, millions of people will die. And it could have been so much worse than it was. What a show, man. Really interesting show. Check it out. Check out the podcast that goes with it. It's good stuff.
Does Stellan Skarsgård, you know what I'm talking about? Does he have a good role?
Yeah, is
I
he,
like him.
He's the older brother of it, isn't he?
No, see, that's what I just found out, is that his son plays Pennywise.
Okay.
It's his son?
Bill Skarsgård.
And then there's Alexander Skarsgård.
Yes. He's got like 10 kids, it looks like. It's very weird. He was also Dr. Selvig in like the Thor and Avengers series.
I don't know who that is.
He was one of the professors in Good Will Hunting. He's a very recognizable figure.
Oh, yes. That guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was trying to like...
The one who was kind of friends with Robin Williams in the movie, but he wanted to kind of a little bit of exploit Matt Damon. Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking
about. He wasn't as he was like the by the book Harvard professor, but Will Hunting was I guess he was smarter than him.
Yeah, but he was also Southie.
Yeah. He's really good. They've got the dude Jared Harris is people remember him as Lane from Mad Men.
All right, man, I wouldn't.
Great role.
Never saw Mad Men.
So yeah, it's gross, man. Gross stuff. Are you going to watch this, Rick?
I don't know.
It's assigned.
It seems like
it's assigned. Go home and watch. What are you going to do tonight?
Okay.
What are you going to do?
Assigned? What are you going to do if he doesn't watch it? Assigned.
It's assigned.
We got WWE SmackDown on tonight. Is this like a character-based show like Game of Thrones where you just get attached to the characters, or is this just like a...
I feel like this would be a little bit more fast-paced.
Crazy stuff going on that, like, that's what's really the draw.
It's, I mean, it's not like Game of Thrones because it's, you know, it's real. But, yeah, I mean, it is a character-based drama. Like, you get attached to the characters, and there's definitely a lot of development going on in that regard. So it's good stuff. Go check it out. 865-546-8200, your number to get on the show, 546-8200. If you want to chime in this afternoon, baseball ball is getting set to get underway against Auburn down at the SEC tournament in Hoover. We will give you updates if they become available, and we will take more of your phone calls when we continue. Plus, news from Manchester, Tennessee.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Man City.
Tragedy at Bonnaroo will fill you in when we continue. Stay with us. It's The Drive right here on Fox Sports Knoxville Fan Run Radio.
Drive. Get some.
Drive continues right here on Fan Run Radio. Tanner Carson in here getting ready for overtime coming up next from 6 until 8 on Fox Sports Knoxville. First pitch for the Vols, and I knew this was going to happen. First pitch for the game is scheduled for 6 o'clock.
Well, the whole day has been delayed because the first game between A&M and maybe
the same thing happens to basketball, right? You get a tournament.
Yeah,
at
but
one
they've
side,
got like weather delays and stuff.
The first game went into extra innings.
Yeah, one game goes long for some reason, and all of a sudden, boom, the whole schedule's thrown off. So 6 o'clock first pitch coming up. I'm sure the Overtime Boys will keep you up to date on everything going there. I have some Peyton Manning. We thought we were going to have some Peyton Manning news, some Peyton Manning speculation. Maybe Peyton's just not going to do anything.
That's what I would do if I were him.
He's like, no, I'm not going to do it. No, he's going to do something eventually. But
I still want to do the drive. But
this is
other than that, I wouldn't want to really do anything.
Has he done 2 years now since he retired?
Yeah, I imagine he doesn't feel real good physically, like orthopedically, when he gets up. I imagine that.
Retired after 2015.
2015 was his last season.
About 3
4 years of just relaxing.
So he's already had 3 years off. This will be his fourth non-football year. That's longer than I thought. I thought he would take a year off and then get into a GM role, a president type role, or broadcasting. And he's going into his fourth year. I mean, maybe he's just waiting on the exact right situation.
Well, how
I've always been kind of surprised that they didn't. He's like 40. That they didn't. Do you know, like, Earnhardt Jr.? Like, he's got that sweet job with him. He's not just a racing guy. They send him to all kinds of sporting events
for NBC Sports. Well, I guess he's doing it. He's got the TV show coming up on ESPN
Plus,
which looks good.
I don't understand why they wouldn't put that on, like, the Deuce. You think they're trying to make money off of ESPN Plus?
To try and get us Tennessee fans who will consume all things Peyton to pay $5 a month for ESPN Plus.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, he was tied to the Jets job. They've got a front office opening, and people are wondering because you got Adam Gase, who's serving as actually the interim general manager after Mike McGanahan was fired. And
what a great name.
They're not going to keep Gase in that role for too long, as he's a young coach and everything. And, of course, Gase was Denver's quarterback's coach for Peyton's first couple of years out there. So these guys know each other. Peyton Manning, a huge Adam Gase fan. I have trouble seeing Peyton with the Jets, though. So he just doesn't pick up and move to New York to be with the Jets.
Reggie Wayne had a really interesting quote about Peyton, I guess, in the last day or two. This is what Reggie Wayne had to say. General manager? Absolutely not. You think Peyton Manning would give an owner an opportunity to fire him? Or have a head coach backstab him and throw shade and get him fired? What I do see him doing is being an owner. I see him being an owner somewhere down the line. That is much more of a Peyton Manning move. Also, Chris Sims of NBC Sports says that he feels like Peyton Manning is either waiting for the Saints or the Titans to potentially come open.
As a GM job or a
ownership? As a GM.
I would tend to agree with that, but Peyton doesn't have the kind. I mean, buying an NFL franchise, he'd have to put together like a consortium of investors where they would make him managing partner in it. But I mean,
which he could do.
I mean, Peyton's worth, I think, last I saw it recently, I think it's somewhere. I mean, he's getting close to $250 million, but you got to be like
billionaire.
Yeah,
to buy it,
$3 or $4 billion just liquid
to buy a team outright. Which, I mean, like most quote-unquote owners have, like Haslam was a minority stake owner in the Steelers for a long time.
Yeah, well, just had no voice in it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the Rooney's team. Like, basically, I'm no expert, but like you just have to get to 51%, right, to be the to be the man, the quote-unquote owner.
I don't even think he's got the – his best deal would be to put together a big group to buy it. And with the understanding that he was going to run the day-to-day operations.
Or maybe not even do that. Maybe just be the owner and hire somebody to do it. Have your football team.
Yeah.
Going on it. See if Eli and Archie want to go in on it with you.
You could do that. I don't think Eli's not worth nearly as much.
Yeah, he's come out and said that he said thanks, but no thanks to the Jets. I don't even know if they came after him, but he said no. He's not doing the Jets.
He's much better. An entertainer.
He is, man.
I mean, dude, he's funny.
And you know he could have had Monday Night Football last year. He could have had it this year. He could have had Tony Romo's job. He could do anything he wants, man. Like, if he wants to do a TV show, he can go to any network, not just ESPN, but any of the, quote-unquote major networks and sit down and say, hey, I got an idea for a show. They're going to do it. Pay him whatever he wants to do it.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, he's in a whole other category of star power. And I mean, the big, and I think that's one of the reasons, going back to Earnhardt, is he's funny. Man, if you're funny, if you're really funny, it opens a lot more doors and being versatile. But
yeah, it's just, it seems like Peyton Manning's 43. Like, how old is Elway? What, 15 or 20 years older than Peyton? And Elway is doing that job perfectly fine right now. So if you're Peyton,
is he? I mean, other than he had that one defense and he got Peyton.
Yeah. I guess he is a quarterback guy and he does not get a quarterback. But what I'm saying is, you know, at his age, like, he's in a healthy position. You know, he's not too old for it or anything like that. So if you're Peyton Manning, like, you're living the life right now. You're about to open up a restaurant. You're hanging out with Brad Paisley all the time doing stinking Nationwide commercials. You're doing a TV show. If I'm Peyton Manning, I'm not doing anything in the NFL unless it is the most perfect opportunity, not just some crappy mid-tier Jets job.
Yeah, because, I mean, he does what he wants to do. Yeah. And he gets up in the morning every day. He doesn't do anything that he doesn't want to do.
Not to mention, he gets to hang out with his kids some more right now, see them grow up a little bit.
Sure.
Well, let's go to the Fox Sports Knoxville breaking news desk because we have some late breaking news this afternoon on the show. Bonnaroo officials have confirmed that the festival's iconic arch was burned intentionally and has been dismantled due to, quote, significant structural issues. The structure has aged beyond repair and was no longer safe to remain in place, festival officials shared in a statement. Its replacement will be revealed in a few short weeks as we welcome everyone back to the farm for the 18th annual music festival.
Have you seen the lineup for this year?
I've not.
Yeah.
A lot, the hardcore Bonnaroo fans will tell you that that festival has long since jumped the shark.
You know what I sat down and figured out for about after everything, and I mean every expense involved with it and the pain of going down there and camping and all that, you could just about, if you book your trip out far enough in advance, you can go to, like, you go over to England and see a concert. You go like Nebworth.
See, Friday, June 14th, you've got Fish, Bonnaroo mainstay, Childish Gambino, the Avett Brothers.
Ugh.
They're awesome.
I cannot stand the Avett Brothers.
The Avett Brothers are great.
They're horrible. They're on the bottom of the music world.
False. Old man take.
No, it's really not.
Let's see what else here. John Prine is playing on Saturday.
Wouldn't mind seeing Prine. I'm not going to go down there and camp on the farm for a weekend to see him, though.
And then on Sunday, Fish is playing again. Two sets from Fish. The Lumineers.
Mm-mm.
Cardi B.
Mm-mm.
You not a big Cardi B fan?
No. Fair?
Brandi Carlile. She was the one who used to be a stripper, right?
Cardi B? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Brandi Carlile. Illenium. Never heard of it. Walk the Moon.
No.
Trampled by Turtles.
I know those guys.
Trampled by Turtles?
Yep.
It's a good band name.
Yeah, they're really nice guys. Got, maybe not surprisingly for a, you know, a kind of hippie-ish bluegrass band, they've got some personal hygiene issues, but they're fantastic musicians.
It's a band called AC Slater.
That's just dumb. Boring. There's no rock stars anymore, Russell.
No.
Gallagher was right.
There's it would no be like if a band from, like, back in our day came up and their name was like, I don't know, what's one of the Happy Days crew? Fonzie.
Yeah, Arthur Fonzarelli.
Do you know who AC Slater is, Rick?
No, I do not.
Really?
Oh, man. We're so old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, no, there's just nothing jumps out at me.
Not doing it for me.
Mm-mm.
865.
There's too many other festivals.
546-8200, your number to get on the show this afternoon. Let's get Roger in here next. Hello, Rog.
Hey, guys. Hey, Bear. How you doing?
Doing excellent, Rog. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. I just wanted to ask y'all, Fort, that's what I asked you about, but kind of different kind of fort, though. That's what I asked you, I was curious about you all about it, is it's a fort, but it's a different kind of fort, it's called Cornhole. That's what I asked you, have y'all ever played a Cornhole
before? Oh, yeah. Big time Cornhole fans here at the Drive.
What now?
Big time cornhole fans here at the Drive, Raj.
Oh yeah, I played it this weekend. I played a long time. Are you good at it, wrestling bear?
Huh. Am I good at it? Am I good at
it? I think it's the stupidest game ever. I'm horrible at it. It's boring. I would rather watch paint dry or ants march up a wall. Than
I would destroy game, Raj. Anybody. In cornhole, yeah. Here at Fan Run, anytime, yeah. Anywhere, any place, destroy.
Oh, really? Are you good at wrestling?
Am I good? Tell him, Rick. Tell him how good I am.
All right. Never seen me play. I'd whip your
good
ass.
Easy.
Oh,
easy now. Roger doesn't like the strong language, Rick.
You're right. I don't like it either.
Do you like the game, Rog? You a good cornhole player?
I like it, but I'm not great at it. I'm okay with it.
I'll tell you what.
But not
next
great,
time,
you know?
The next time we have a show out at Corner 16 in West Knoxville, you come on out, Raj, and I will give you some pointers and turn you into a cornhole champion.
And I just wanted to ask you about that's why I asked you about the game tonight. I know you play baseball play tonight. That's why I asked you how you think they're gonna do tonight.
I think we're gonna win.
I think we're gonna walk a dog walk them. Just pound them into submission, Raj.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope it can go far. To win tonight, hopefully. The key is tonight.
Score more runs than Auburn. No, sorry, Rob, I'm being a smart aleck. Pitching, Garrett Stallings, how deep can he go? Can we get 6-7 good innings out of Stallings? That means that we've held him down. Then you turn it over to the bullpen. And, this team has been good in these type of pressure-type situations, so we'll see if they can get it done here tonight.
I'd like to see – Solari had an up-and-down weekend versus Ole Miss. He's going to be super key for us to get – where we need to go. So let's see him bounce back.
All right, Raj, thanks for the phone call. Bud Elliott, who is the recruiting director at SB Nation, with a sobering tweet here. And this is a good bookend to the depressing start to the show.
I think I know which one you're doing.
This is how old current recruits were when your team last won a national championship. So... And they're saying 17 years old, right, are the current recruits. So, obviously, Clemson, 17. Alabama, 16. Auburn, 9. So, Gus Malzahn's out there recruiting because the kids he's recruiting were 9 years old the last time Auburn won a natty. Florida is 7, which I guess that's good for us. Florida State is 12. LSU is 6. They're losing some of that relevancy. Miami, 6 weeks old. The kids who were born in 2001.
Wow.
Ohio State, 13. Buckeyes can still point to a recent championship. Texas, 4. That's pretty much irrelevant. USC, 3. Pretty much irrelevant. And that's it. That's it. For 17-year-olds being recruited, they would be negative 3 years old when Tennessee won the national championship in 1998.
I don't think there's such a thing as negative 3.
No, Bear, no, there's not. Oklahoma, negative 1. It's hard to believe. Oklahoma, as successful as they've been, they only won that one national championship in 2000.
Sam Bradford?
No, Josh Heupel.
Oh.
Bradford was a couple years later. And then Nebraska with negative 4. So, I mean, they're kind of in the same boat as us. Michigan, too. They split that national championship in 1997. Been a minute. All right. On that note, thank you, Rick. Thank you, Parker. Thank you, Bear. We've got Overtime Boys coming in here to do their thing next. Another day, another dollar, another stellar edition of The Drive in the books. Overtime 6 to 8. We'll do it again tomorrow right here on Fan Run Radio.